So in Japan, I had a Japanese guy that I was working with for a while. One of the things that we did when we were researching, we got books that were written for Japanese girls, teaching them how to get a foreign guy. And one of the books said, the Western guy is trying to have sex with you. Don't tell him no or stop because he will. In Asia, they'll say that, but it's just, they're just saying it because of something what we call anti-slut defense. It's like if she doesn't say no or stop, then you just think she's an easy girl and she sleeps with everybody. This is the Asian perspective.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
What do I need to know before we get started?
Not much. It's just it's a regular conversation, so there's no numbers or anything that I'm going to be asking you.
I mean, I listen to your podcast sometimes. So I'm somewhat familiar with how it works, and it seems pretty chill. So, you know, I was listening to your call with Alyssa just last week, I think that was.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of more coming. I'm actually rethinking the format of it, too. So I'm going to switch things up every few weeks. So mm-hmm. I'll have a temporary co-host, and I'll have some interviews and other things. I just don't want to do the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Have you listened to the You Are Not So Smart podcast?
Not yet. Should I?
I'm not a huge podcaster, but I think his format is very interesting. He has an interview, and then after the interview, he has an introduction, and usually the introduction is some kind of story that sort of illustrates the point. That he's going to discuss. And then he has an interview with, someone who usually wrote a book that addresses that kind of subject and did research in that area. And then he has this thing where he eats a cookie that a reader has sent in the recipe for.
Oh, wow.
And it's really funny because he'll be like, okay, and he explains about the cookie. And then he'll be like, oh, good God. Wow. Oh, heaven has descended upon me. Oh, something like that. And it's really funny. And then he'll like read some research. He'll read like a research study about something. Usually it's related to cognitive biases. And then he has another, so he has two formats. That's one format. And the other format is called like his in-between-isodes. And then the in-between-isodes are like shorter. Sometimes he does like a reading from, he has like two books and he'll do like a reading from one of his books. So anyway, I think that it's a pretty interesting format. Most podcasts just have a person and they talk about something and maybe they interview someone. That's about it.
Yeah, and that's what I've been doing. So I've been listening to some podcasts from different niches though, right? So I'm avoiding the business niche as much as possible and just trying to catch things that they're doing. That's cool.
So how's it been working in terms of business?
I mean, it's good. I get a lot of downloads and people email me with different things all the time. It's pretty cool. But, you know, just when I listen to it, I feel like I want to do better, right? Like I want to switch this up so it's just interesting to me more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm hearing too many interviews on podcasts and I actually stopped listening to almost everything because it's like, you know what? It's all the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
By getting into different niches, like Hardcore History was one podcast I picked up.
I love that podcast. It's great.
It's insane. It's amazing. And then I listened to What the Fuck with this comedian. All he does is tell stories in the beginning and then interviews other comedians, but in a different way. And it's cool. It's just so different than the business stuff. Like, so what was your hardest thing? And then how did you overcome it? And, you know, just like the same questions over and over. It's boring.
Yeah, I guess the only business kind of business podcast I listen to, I guess, is James Altucher, but that's just because he's crazy.
Yeah, but dude, James is not even really about business much, man. Most of the time, what does he say is like, okay, man, getting a 9-to-5 sucks. Doing a business sucks. So how do you make money? You write 10 ideas a day. That's how you make money. And you do it every day for the whole year. In 6 months, you will start making cash. Like, he's just different, man. That's not really business. Like, the stuff he talks about, it's like, what planet is he from? But I'm still listening.
Yeah, that's about as formal as I go on the this podcast. I listened to Hobo CEO because I know Chris Kirkland.
Yeah, I know Chris too, but I haven't listened to it. Is it good?
I think the quality varies widely on his podcast, actually. Some of them are really good. Some of them it's like, really like the You Are Not So Smart podcast and the Hardcore History. I like religiously listen to them pretty much. It's hard to religiously listen to Hardcore History because it only comes out like once every 3 months. Basically, if that episode comes out, then I clear my schedule for that day. And I'm always checking back, like maybe it's here and I just didn't get a notification.
Yeah, but it takes him so long, man. He does a lot of research for him. He'll buy 50 or 60 books, sit down in some dungeon in his basement, and then he comes out once every 3 months and it's like, I'm ready.
And then he mentioned like a few of the ones that he actually re-recorded because he didn't like them, which is, you know,
that's insane. It's like 2 hours of re-recording. Like, you know, I didn't like that part in the middle. Let's just start over. It's like,
you already have like a way to shunt people into, you know, something beyond, you know, just building up your audience.
By talking to some of the listeners, they just want to hear how the people actually are and just hear different things and just how do I get better at business? You have a very fun business, so there's got to be some fun stories in there.
Yeah, I guess the main question I need to know is what should I not talk about?
The thing is, if something just doesn't cut it, I'll edit that part out. Like if it's something that's just too much, but other than that, man, just be free. Because
okay.
The thing you would think would make them not want to listen to it actually makes them want to listen to you even more.
Uh-huh.
Did he just say that? You help pretty much white guys pick up women in Southeast Asia. Is that pretty much it?
Actually, not usually Southeast Asia.
Okay.
Mostly my clients are in East Asia or developed Asia is what I like to call it, developed Asia, because we have Singapore, although not that much. And we have, Taiwan and Hong Kong. Really, the difference is how large of a middle class do they have? If they have a large middle class, then your personality becomes important.
Okay. So basically, you have the two Asias. You got the crappy Asia and you got the regular Asia, right? So you have the Southeast and then you have the Korea, Japan, Taiwan. I don't know. China would be in the regular one, right? So
simply because they have such a huge population that they also have a large middle class.
Okay. So you're helping, but is it mostly white guys or is it Asian guys too picking up
documents? It's mostly white guys. It's mostly Americans and Canadians, but we do get Europeans and foreign-born Asians. FBAs as a catch-all term, foreign-born Asians who, you know, they grew up in Canada or the U.S. and they moved to Asia as adults. And so they are not accustomed to the dating culture. We get two broad categories of clients. And the two broad categories of clients are late bloomers, guys who they're young, they're in their early 20s, and they finished university and they're working for their first time and they happen to be here in Asia. Maybe they've had a girlfriend. Maybe they're virgins. I mean, I've had guys that are 20. I've had 23-year-old. I had a 23-year-old virgin. I had 3 25-year-old virgins. And I had 3 29-year-old virgins, if you don't count hookers.
That's funny. So it makes me think of the 40-year-old virgin movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get a whole bunch of these guys together, and you're like, all right, guys, let's do this.
You know, it was really funny because one of the 29-year-old virgins, when the first time he had sex, actually, I don't think in his case he was totally a virgin. I think he even didn't have, maybe he did have sexual, I can't remember. But he messaged me and he said, "Oh man, it's like I overate, but with sex."
Can't imagine. But you know, the funny thing is that the economy changed. You can see that now because you can't imagine 20 years ago white guys paying to pick up Asian women anywhere, right? Like it would be the other way around. Like the Asian families would pay you to help them get the white guys, which you could probably still do in the crappy Asia. But yeah, now yeah. It's so different, right? The economies in Korea, Japan, and obviously Hong Kong, Singapore are so strong that like a white guy getting a woman up there is like a ticket out.
Well, you know, there's a couple of interesting things. I think you're right. You know, the economy has shifted and that's been a major factor. But the other factor is that essentially what happens usually is that Western guys, when they get to Asia, are not dating the girls that are popular. And that was the same with me. You know, what happens is you move to Asia and over time, your tastes tend to shift. So that's where we get the other type of client. The other type of client is older, late 20s, generally already pretty successful. You know, not like, you know, he's a baller or anything like that, but, you know, he has a career, he has money, he has a job, he sort of knows what he's doing. So he's had girlfriends. Some of them have been married before. But, you know, they don't have a problem with getting girls in general, but they have the problem in, you know, they've realized, hey, you know, I'm able to get girls, but I'm not getting the girls that I want. And that thing happens a lot for guys who've been in Asia for for a long time, because when you first get here, and I had this too, I just thought, wow, all these girls are dressed well, they do their makeup, their hair is done, they're thin, oh my God, wow, this is incredible. After being in America, you know, it doesn't take, for guys who've lived in America, it doesn't take much to impress them. I mean,
well, really. It depends where, right? Like, if you come from New York, San Francisco, it's like, it's okay. But if you come from the Midwest or down South, you're like, man.
I actually think that even, you know, compared to New York and the best cities in America, it's a big change. Because now, when I go to New York, I just walk around and I'm wowed, you know, I'm wowed at how everyone looks so terrible. Now, there are places that you can go and, you know, to see really attractive people. That's true. Anywhere in America, there are places where you can go and there are beautiful people. But it's not that you stumble across them on an everyday basis when you're walking down the street and, you know, within 5 minutes, 20 girls turn your head the way it is in Korea and Japan and Hong Kong.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It's based on neighborhoods in the States. Like in New York, if you go on the Upper East Side, you will be just fine. But right. Then if you were like Coney Island or something, you're gonna be like, oh man,
Well, even if you're in Brooklyn or something, you know, there's not that many. I mean, you can go to Williamsburg in particular. And I guess in Asia, that's somewhat true too. You know, in Seoul, a lot of people would argue that Gangnam has really attractive women. And pretty much other parts of the city aren't that good. Once again, this is one of those things where the longer you live in Asia, the more discerning you are. And I think that there's a couple of things about this. You know, so for example, when I first moved to Asia, I didn't have so many specifics that I cared about. But now what I really, really like is I love Asian girls with their hair dyed blonde. I love it.
That's like a fetish, man.
Well, it's kind of a fetish. But the thing is that I really tend to like those types of girls, the type of girl who dyes her hair blonde in terms of her lifestyle, her personality. It means certain things about who she is as a person that she dyes her hair blonde. This is a thing that's particularly common in Japan, not as common in other countries. So
yeah, I could see that. What's the saying? The nail that sticks out needs to be nailed back in, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If she's dyeing her hair blonde, it means she's that nail, so she's different.
But there is, in Japan, once again, there's a lot of Japanese girls who are like that. But the thing is that if you dye your hair blonde, it means certain things. It means, one, you don't work in an office, because if you work in an office, you know, your hair is going to be black or just slightly highlighted. And if you don't work in an office, it means that you are probably working class. And that means that you're doing something in general where you're going to be interacting with people on a regular basis. So oftentimes it means you're a hairdresser or your shop staff, you know, in a clothing store, or maybe you work at a cafe. And what that generally means is that, one, you have a lot more free time. And two, you don't hate your life.
That's a big one.
And so that's really the point. When you find a girl in Japan with black hair, that often means that she's been doing everything that she was supposed to do her entire life. So happened to go to a club last night. I was invited out by this girl that I know here. So she's a great example. So she dyes her hair. What does she do? Well, she's a student, but she also models. So it's not really that, you know, if you're a model, then you probably, you know, you might have black hair, but a lot of times you might not. But I met these two Japanese girls, and one of them had her hair dyed, you know, not like platinum blonde. I mean, it's just like, you know, a really light brown. And then her friend who works in an office, who was much more plain, much less focused on looking hot. And for me, if you have an entire country filled with people that are trying to look hot, then why not pick the ones who do it the best?
How'd you even get into all this stuff?
I'm in the late bloomer camp. So I went to an all-boys school in junior high and high school, and I got my first girlfriend when I moved to university, which is pretty, when I started going to university, which is pretty good. I mean, you know, compared to a lot of my clients. I moved to Japan after I graduated from university, because I dated that girl for the full 2.5 years after I got her until I graduated. Just wanted to do better with women myself. Every time I go to any new country in Asia, or I tell someone I'm going there, they go, oh man, they love foreign guys out there. That's what I always hear. You've probably heard that too, although maybe not so much now that you're married, yeah?
I think it's true to a point, but I always wonder, I see all these guys here with ugly looking women, and I think most of them are pensioners,
exactly.
Right? But still, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's funny because if you ask Asian people, Japanese, Korean, girls or guys, you ask them, they will say, oh, you know, girls love foreign guys. And then if you say to them, Do Western guys date cute girls? They'll say no. It's like going to America and saying, oh, fatties are so easy. Like, well, no kidding. I mean, if you're going for all the fatties, it's like, you know, they're not getting that many offers. Although in America, I think they do get a lot of offers these days, but it didn't used to be like that when I lived there.
I think it's a new fetish. It's like you with the blonde.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, you know, people do say that. I don't know if this is true in America, but they definitely say that in Asia, the girls that are fat, which is, you know, pretty rare, are much more enthusiastic and give way better blowjobs. But I have never been disappointed with any of the blowjobs I've gotten. So I heard, oh, it's going to be so easy. So I moved to Japan, and my first year, I got 3 girls, which isn't terrible. But if you saw the girls I didn't get, and they were not even good, you know, they were like old or early 30s and not very attractive. And, you know, they were rejecting me. So it was clear that, and it wasn't like the Western guys that I knew were, you know, just getting it left and right. I knew one guy who was kind of famous for having slept with so many women. But there was just one guy. I think that what happens oftentimes is there's the one guy that knows lots of people. And he's sleeping with a lot of women. And so people extrapolate that to assume that everybody could be or is doing that, when in reality, that's not the case. So I was like, well, you know, obviously, you know, I'm going to clubs every, you know, twice a week. I'm very social. I meet lots of women. I get a few dates. Most of the dates don't lead to sex. So despite people saying it's so easy, clearly it's not easy for me. So I don't know if that's, I've got personal problems, but I wanted to sort it. I started hanging out with this guy who was really good with girls. I mean, he was taking girls home pretty much every Friday and Saturday night, a new girl. Now, he had no standards. He would do anything, really. And so what that meant is that most of the time, he would talk to a girl, and I would be talking to her. He would be talking to an ugly girl. I'd be talking to her uglier friend.
Oh, no.
Maybe 30 minutes or an hour later, I would wonder where he was, and I would message him, and I would say, hey, man, where are you? And he'd say, oh, yeah, you know, I got this girl. We're back at my place now. And then, so he's back at this place, and I'm still having a boring conversation with this really ugly woman that I didn't really want to talk to. But it was like, wow, how do you do that? Because it wasn't even because I didn't have that many options, I was, you know, I would have had sex with this really ugly girl. I just didn't know what to do to make it happen. So that was the first guy that I knew who I spent a lot of time with, who I could really start to see that there was a method to what he was doing. So I really started hanging out with more guys like that. Now, this is before formal Western pickup existed. We sort of had our own methods. We had our own lingo. None of us worked very much. So when we weren't working, we were just hanging out somewhere, talking, and talking about messaging girls, talking to girls, and we were talking to girls and sharing stories. Being in an environment where I was surrounded by guys who, what they were really into, because the guy who, I call him the leader of the old crew, his name is Gavin. One of the things that he was not interested in having a relationship with a woman. So that meant that he was always out looking for new girls. And so that was very important, because what happens is that most guys, really what happens is that they are out, and then once they get a girl that's kind of better than what they normally get, they settle down. That's the vast majority of guys who are players.
So what's your boot camp like?
So basically, there's 4 sessions, and each session has a seminar portion. I teach the guy something about what's supposed to happen in the interaction, what she should be doing to drive that interaction forward. In my case, it's not based around getting girls into bed, actually. That's never been my skill set. It's really about finding girls that you like and getting girls you like into bed. Girls, especially in Asia, this is so important, is that they want to be with guys that like them. So I never really developed the skill of just being able to get a girl to sleep with me who I wasn't necessarily interested in.
So you said 4 sessions, like 4 different components, right?
2 night game sessions and 2 day game sessions. All of the sessions have the seminar portion where I cover some material. Then they have the in-field session. That's when we're actually out meeting girls, going to a club, and they're approaching women and they're talking to them. Or daytime, they're approaching women in the street or at a cafe or in a bookstore or in a mall or something. And I'm there watching them, and I'll give them feedback about their body language, about what they said and what they could have said that was better. There's lots of adjustments you can make on any individual interaction, but then you want to look at the overarching theme here. Okay, this guy, when he talks to girls that he really likes, he he's really timid and he doesn't really push things forward as he should, or he gives up really easily.
It's like selling, yeah. Right? If you talk to enough people, you will eventually sell.
Every guy, when they do during the boot camp, during the weekend training, they have some level of success in that regard. You know, every guy will approach at some point at least one girl on his own and be really pleased with how well the interaction went. Now, maybe he'll be pleased because the girl is more attractive than a girl he would have ever talked to before. Maybe he's pleased because he had a really fun interaction with her, or because he has a date set up, or sometimes they meet girls and they're able to take them for a coffee on the same day. There's definitely success in the boot camp. Beyond the boot camp, it's really hard to know, because you get some guys that really just drop off. A lot of guys, especially if they already have really developed social circles, they'll kind of disappear and just bring those skills back to their social circle.
That makes sense.
But then there's the other guys.
That makes sense.
Who, you know, are much more involved. We have chat groups in most of the cities in Asia for guys to sort of continuously be in touch, talking about their adventures, meeting up together and things like that, to really understand that it's up to the person. And when I say that, you know, I had one guy who I really was really only one client where I thought, man, maybe, you know, I shouldn't take this guy on as a client. He was born with a pretty severe physical birth defect. And so this was the first guy I really didn't know whether it would be possible, because as a guy, especially, I mean, I don't know about you, but I would never, ever have sex with a girl who was three fingers on each hand and two toes on each foot. I just wouldn't. And I know, you know, some people might think that makes me, you know, some kind of pig, but, you know, whatever. I have what I like. So, and I think in general, guys tend to operate that way. Although I do know a guy who did marry a midget. So everyone has their own strike zone, as Japanese would say. But I decided that might as well give it a go. I mean, he basically said to me that if this didn't work out, then he was just going to give up on the idea of ever having relationships. And I thought, wow, that's a pretty terrible place to be. So I just told him, look, just promise that you'll do whatever I ask you to. And yeah, within 3 months, he got himself a girlfriend.
That's a good case study, right?
What was really interesting for me was that even just watching when we were at the club and he was interacting with people, you know, girls didn't really react that much to how he looked physically. They just seemed to interact with him like anybody else. The real interesting difference, I guess, between women and men, that just shows you that women really are much more interested in your personality and who you are as a person.
So most of these interactions, are they done in English, or are these guys speaking the language wherever they're going?
Varies according to the client. I think in Japan, a lot of the guys there speak Japanese, because Japanese speak such little English in general. So they tend to pick up Japanese pretty quickly. In Korea, it's more of a mixed bag, because Koreans have significantly better English levels. In China, actually, interestingly, a lot of the guys speak Chinese. It seems that Chinese is a pretty easy language to learn from a speaking perspective.
Okay.
Korean seems to be the hardest. Most people need to put a good amount of study in, even to have everyday conversations. And there's plenty of guys who have lived there for years and speak nothing. Also, it depends on the guy's profession. In Japan, I used to get a lot of bankers, and they never learned Japanese. They're in a totally English environment with girls who work there, or Japanese who work there, who, you know, develop English skills.
How do you market these services? Because it seems like you kind of have to market in a couple different languages.
Really, it's more about country. It's interesting, because when we first started, we were called the Osaka Crew, because I lived in Osaka, and that's what we just called our crew. When we put up our website, this was in January 2007. So, the whole pickup thing was very new. Still, it had been around a while, but it was just starting to go more mainstream. And we were really the first people in Asia. And, you know, so it was not hard in the beginning to get the word out. And there was a lot of word of mouth, and people were very excited about the idea of learning how to pick up girls. That was like a really exciting thing. And it was kind of cool to like learn about at the time. And so there was a lot of word of mouth. Nowadays, a lot of my clients come from word of mouth, because guys in Asia are much more open to meeting strangers in general, because you meet new people on a regular basis because people are in and out. Most guys who are here are single. Then my clients might mention me, and that's how I get a good chunk of my business. Most of it just comes through pretty standard marketing practices, I guess. People do a Google search for pick up in Asia, or pick up Japan, or boot camp in Asia, boot camp in Hong Kong, or something like that. And I think I'm generally one of the first results that comes up. There are other companies that do trainings, but they are not full time in Asia. It's usually the big companies in America, and they come out here every now and then, and oh, the principles are the same. And obviously, they know something, but they miss a lot of the nuances that you should understand about Asia.
It seems like if you want to run the type of a business, you need a method, right? So would the same method work in Japan, Korea, and China, or do you have to change up the methods a little bit?
The strategy is the same, but the tactics are different. Okay, so here's an example of a small difference. In Japan versus Korea, in Korea, girls expect you to show a lot more interest. They expect you to text them a lot more. It's really common to text back and forth a lot on a given day. Whereas in Japan, Taiwan also, and Hong Kong, the back and forth response times tend to be slower. So a girl might not reply for 12 hours or until the next day. Whereas in Korea, a girl will generally reply within an hour to any text message you send. And if you're not replying back, you know, pretty quickly, then she'll think that you're not very interested in her.
So it's time consuming in Korea.
It can be. It can be. I think that, you know, I actually run, in addition to the boot camps, one of the seminars that I've been teaching is a text messaging seminar. And so it doesn't have to be time consuming. It really depends. You have to set things up in a way where she understands that you're interested in her, but you're not stuck glued to your phone 24/7. I mean, unless you want to be, obviously.
Yeah, I would imagine you can buffer things like updates in Facebook.
We've discussed the idea of having a program that does that sort of thing for you, actually. But I mean, really, I mean, can't really, but you can buffer it in your mind.
Just thinking about that, because in Thailand, like, all the girls, whether they're working or not, they're glued to their phones, right? Like, I even had a massage therapist that, you know, the wife was just laughing because this girl, she's got the phone in one hand and she's just like doing something with the other. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah, that's true. And you can't really get around it. I mean, it used to be, and this is something that's interesting that's changed, is that it used to be that you could meet a girl on a night out or in the daytime and you could plan a date for 2 or 3 days later and you didn't even need to talk to her. You could just show up 2 or 3 days later at the appointed spot at the appointed time and she would show up. Nowadays, you can't do that anymore. You have to be kind of in some level of continuous interaction with them over the course of that 2 or 3 days. Otherwise, they'll just assume that you forgot about it when you're not coming and you're not interested. So that's an interesting shift that's happened since I first started living in Asia, you know, 15 years ago, and since I first started teaching 7 years ago. A text game has gotten much more important. But in another sense, it's not a big deal because there are so many more things you can do with texts now than you could before. You can send people web links, you can send them videos, you can send pictures, you can send voice messages. So even though in terms of the amount of time you have to spend texting, the fact that you're not limited to, you know, sending 140 characters makes it so it's not so terrible.
So how do you think this whole industry will change and I guess evolve in the next couple of years? Because it seems like things are moving more into the whole texting and the web.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting that a lot of it's shifting to online. But really, most people will tell you that consistently online girls are not as hot. That's what they'll tell you. So even though they like online because it's essentially much easier, they're not as satisfied with the results. So for me, I don't really do online. It doesn't work for me. The kind of girls that I like, I can't get them online, whether largely, partially, because they're not on the internet doing internet dating, because these are really attractive girls. They've got so many guys throwing it at them. There's no reason for them to be on the internet. Now, maybe in the States, you know, people live in places that are out of the way or things, but, you know, Asians are really social, much more social. They're getting invited out. They're hanging out in large groups all the time. So they're always in places where they can meet people. They have lots of access to guides. And also attractive Asian girls are often modeling or doing some customer-facing work. So they're getting guys thrown at them all the time. The girl that I mentioned last that I went to the club with last night, she's 20, right? So she's, you know, the generation you think of that would be on online. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, my friends have been telling me about this thing, Tinder. You know, I had a look at it. It's so weird. And that's it for her. She's, you know, because she has no need. She has no need to be on Tinder.
Yeah, but I even heard about that in the States, though, that a lot of the younger people are getting off of Facebook and getting off of a lot of these social sites. So I think it's a trend that's not just in Asia. One of the reasons I think it is because, you know, if you have your parents on a social site, you don't want to be on the site anymore.
With Tinder, you know, your parent, you don't have to worry about coming across your dad's swipe.
Tinder, I think, is kind of weird in the first place. But I just mean like these bigger social sites that used to attract people much more before. What's your week look like overall? Because I bet that's interesting to some people. What's that job look like?
I moved to Taiwan recently, last year, and I moved here so that my week could be very boring, because I wanted to focus more on marketing. And so I wanted to have a boring life, pretty much. So these days, it's really slow. I go out maybe once a week or something like that. I have a few dates a week with girls that I'm seeing or trying to see. And then I spend most of the rest of my time in front of my computer doing some marketing stuff or reading books. It's really, really slow. I don't have a lot of clients in Taiwan, so that's why this is the perfect place for me right now when I want to focus on the marketing. But when I was more, you know, in Japan, Korea, Hong Kong, I'm always with some of my clients and we're always going out, and I have no time to get anything done at all. A large chunk of my time is spent on these the chat groups that we have all over and guys posting screenshots. We have our messaging group chat, and we have a group chat for the guys who did my sex seminar. So that can be pretty interesting. I'm on there and guys are talking about whatever issue they're having and posting screenshots of their conversations. And I'm sort of going, oh, this is what you should say. You should say this. Oh, you should say this. And there's a lot of discussion. Oh, what about this? Or what's going on with this girl?
Sounds like you have a life that a lot of single pensioners would want to have. Let's say one of them wants to find you and have you take them on a bootcamp. You have like a age limit or
no,
you can
no,
either take
had,
anyone?
I had a guy. Oh, man, one time in Japan, I had this guy who was 59 years old.
Perfect.
Man, I took him out to, and we went to the Diesel Triple X party event where they rent out like one of those expo centers. And they have these three huge pavilions. And man, he went and talked to this girl. She had wearing these booty cutters with one fishnet stocking. The other leg was bare. She was wearing a hot pink tube top. This girl was 23, and you should have seen everyone who was in shock to watch this guy. I mean, he wasn't a guy who was like 59, but looked like he was 30. He was a 59-year-old guy who looked like he was 60 or 65 or something. He was chatting up this girl. Everyone was staring at him in shock at this fact that he was talking to this really gorgeous girl. And a couple days later, the girl actually went on a date with him.
I think you just sold every listener that's single and above 55 in Asia right now. Tell people where they can find you.
You can go to pickupasia.com. That's the place. You can find me there, pickupasia.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.